This lecture, entitled The Age of the Earth, Part 1, is dedicated to the memory and Le'ilui Nishmas of Rabbi Yeshua ben Ben Zion, Olav HaShalom, a blessed memory. A little over 200 years ago, if you would have asked almost anyone, from biblical scholars to naturalists and geologists, how old is the earth? Except for perhaps for a relative handful of atheists, the answer would be, without almost any hesitation, less than 6,000 years. 50 years later, even before the publication of Darwin's Origin of Species, the answer given by most students of geology and even many members of the clergy would have been millions of years. Today, of course, the answer given by students of geology, as well as the majority of the clergy, would be several billions of years. Those who still believe in the literal interpretation of the Torah, and they still make up a sizable minority, are viewed by the secular media and the general college-educated public as being hopelessly misinformed. The truth is, however, that those who do believe in the literal reading of the text of the Torah have a very strong support for their views, not only from the Torah itself, but also from compelling geological and other scientific evidence. Unfortunately, their position is rarely ever articulated to the general public. This lecture is the first part of a three-part lecture entitled The Age of the Earth. In this and the following lectures, we will explain the basis for the various views of the Earth's age and the various interpretations of the Torah that are embraced by those who take a more modern view of the age of the Earth. In the next two lectures, we'll touch upon the scientific evidence that supports both the view that the world is some 4 billion years old, as well as the view as the world is only some 6,000 years old. I would first like to touch upon the sources which form the basis of the traditional view, as it is recorded in the Torah. At the end of your notes, back of your notes, on page 12, we deal with the basis of the Jewish chronology. Where does it come from? In other words, you go to a bookstore and you get a Jewish calendar, and it says this year is 5,767. Where did it come from? Where did they get that number? So the basis is as follows. Here we start off that Adam lived for 130 years, and he begat a son, Shace, Seth. So we start off from the creation of Adam, which is the sixth day of creation, from that point until he had a child, Shace, Seth, 130 years went by. It seems the interpretation is that not in the 130th year, but after 130 years had gone by. This is how it's understood. When they say he was 130 years old, means he had completed 130 years. And then you can take from that, you can keep on adding. As we have, and Seth lived 105 years and begat Enosh. So already we have the 130, and the 105, we have the year 235. In other words, not the year 235, 235 years have passed. Actually, when we deal with this, when we say this year in the calendar is 5,767, it means the 5,767th year. It's the beginning of the year. That year will only be completed at the eve of Rosh Hashanah, of our coming Rosh Hashanah. So really, we're saying that really 5,666 years have been completed, and now we are in several months within that 67th year. So, but when we deal with these dates, we're dealing with how many years have passed. In addition, this is a point we're going to deal with soon. our calendar, when they speak about years, again, even though we're it's based upon the numbers I'm telling you now, they also count the first 5 days of creation as this truncated year. It's a smaller year. So that Adam was created after this small year had been finished and the new year began. According to Rabbi Eliezer, Adam was created in the beginning of Tishrei. If so, according to this view, and we're going to see further, the creation of light, the first day, was on the 25th day of Elul, the equivalent of. And that would be year number one. Now, Adam Arishon now is created on the first of Tishrei, and he is just born. Nothing has happened, but it is already year number two. We're in year number two. Speaking about having head start, you know what I mean? So already he comes into the world in this, already it's the second year. So if Adam Arishon would have gone to a bookstore and already have purchased the calendar, it would say year two. So that's why it gets a little confusing. These numbers are how many years have passed since the creation of Adam. So according to our calendar, it says, if let's say this had 235 years had passed, we are in the 236th year, right? But if he went to a bookstore to get a calendar, it would say year 237. Because 235 years have passed since the creation of Adam. This is already in the next year, but the bookstores count not from the birth of Adam, they create from the first 5 days of creation. So already you're getting an extra 2 years. That's a good bargain, yeah? Okay. And it keeps on going. Anush lived 90 years in Beth Canaan, so we have add another 90 through 325. Canaan, says, gave birth to Mahalalel. After 70 years old. So he had 70, that's 395. Mahalalel lived 65 years and begat Yared. So you add 65 to that, to 395, you get 460. Yared lived 162 years and begat Chanoich. So you add 162 to 460, you get 622. Chanoich lived 65 years and begat Mesushelach. So you add 65 to that, you get 687. This is again, Mesushelach lived 187, begat Lemech. So you add 187, you get 875. Lemech lived 182 years and begat Noach. That's 1056. Meaning, again, 1,056 years have passed. That's at least how it's understood. We're already now beginning the 1,057th year from the creation of Adam. Or not to confuse things, if you went into a bookstore at that point, you would see the year. This is 158. Noach was 500 years old, and he begat Shem, Chom, v'Yefes. Really, the Yefes was it's based on proofs, was actually the first of his children. Shem, the most prestigious, actually was the last. They happened 1 year after the next. And Shem, when Noach was 502 years old, he had Shem. So it was 500 years past. And the 600th year of Noah's life, and that's a question, if the 600th year or 600 years have already passed, and we went with the assumption that 600 years already passed. So the date would be 1656, meaning 1,656 years have already passed, you know, and then there was the flood. 2 years after the onset of the flood, then Shem was 100 years old, and Megat Arpachshad, this is 2 years after the flood. And we keep on adding, you can see by yourself, all the dates, until we get, this is in the top of page 13, Terach lived 70 years, and Megat Avram, Nachor, and Horon, says, and Horon, and it's understood that date is 1948. I remember when I was in Eretz Yisrael in Baltimore, and my Rebbe was from David Kronglass, Olav HaShalom. And on Fridays, and this is in the regular day, we went through Gomorrah. That was, but on Fridays he spent some of the time going over his Yedias Klolius, like just general thing every educated Jew should know. And he went through, the dates. He should know when people were born, when everything. And he came out to 1948. I mean, the truth is, as we're speaking, it's really not 1948. It would have been really 1950. Right. In other words, because we count the years, this is 1948, have already passed. We're beginning the 1949th year, but the way our bookstore, and this is the standard thing, if you write a ksuba, and if you write the dates we go, we count those first 5 days. So it really been 1950. But the date that the Rebbe gave was 1948. I remember one guy, I don't want to say his name, in the back, said, he was a post-war baby. it really meant something in those days. Yeah, okay, so we got to 1948 was that many years have passed that Terach begat Avram. 100 years passed. Before, when Avram was 70 years old, this is according to traditions, the Seder Olam, he first made his first exploratory trip to Eretz Yisrael. He eventually left. He left this place, Choron, he left when he was 75. But he originally left, he said, Lech Lecho, when he told him to go, he made this exploratory trip, he was 70 years old. So that would be the year, after 2018 years have passed since the creation of man. This is, when Avram was 100 years old, Yitzchak, Isaac, was born to him, that's the year 2048. The Exodus was 2,448. Very often you'll see that number. But that means that many years have passed since the creation of man. How we're saying then it's really the 2,449th year. And again, according to your bookstore calendar, that would be 2,050th year. There's a pasuk in, so we have already, we know we have a date for the Exodus. There's a pasuk, there's a verse in Kings 1, this is Melachim Aleph, chapter 6, Perek Vav, and the very first pasuk, the very first verse, and it came to pass 480 years after the children of Israel came out of the land of Egypt in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, that he began to build the house of the Lord. He began to build the Bayis Rishon, the first temple in Yerushalayim. So that's 480 years had passed. Then if we add 480 to the Exodus, we get now already 2,928 years have passed since the creation of man. According to tradition, this is the Seder, this is the Brice of the Seder Olam, it's quoted in the Gorm Bava Basra, Gimel Amud Aleph, and 3a. The first temple stood for 410 years. If you read secular history books, they have it, it's close to that number, but it's slightly different, because it's very difficult to really add everything together, because you're adding really the reigns of the kings, and there's an overlap of the kings. Very often, one king would become a king in the lifetime of his father. So there's a question, how do I add all of these together? So you'll find discrepancies. But the Talmudic tradition is 410 years. Adding 410 years, therefore, the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash is the year 3338. That's how many years had passed. And if you add, again, these extra 2 years, that would be in your... If you would have gone to a bookstore that year, it would be 3340. 70 years after the destruction of the first temple, the second temple was built, and that's 3408. The second temple, you go to the number 30 here, the second temple stood for 420 years. So that will give you a year 3828. It seems that year wasn't completed yet, according to Rashi. Now, Rashi learns, the Rambam learns, that year was not completed. It was destroyed in Tisha B'Av. Rosh Hashanah comes out you know, in the first of Tishrei. Right? So we have a 7 weeks from the destruction of the temple till Rosh Hashanah. So it's almost 3,828 years have passed. According to Tosfos, in Avodah Zorah, in Tesomet Beis, in 9b, actually 3,828 years had fully passed. This was in the destruction of the temple happened in the 3,829th year. It was almost the end of the year, but it was still that year. This is how Tosfos understands. The difference comes out, which is very interesting. The difference comes out about what year, if so, what year in the secular calendar was the temple destroyed? If you maintain that it happened in the 3,828th year and it hasn't finished, therefore, if you'd gone to a bookstore and that thing, you would have picked up you would have seen that the number is 3,829. Because you're in the 28th year, hadn't finished, and we count an extra year because of the 5 days. According to Tosfos, the number would have been 3,830. Because it was the 29th year from the creation of 3,829. It was in that year from the creation of man. You have that extra truncated year, the 5 day year. So it would come out to be 3,000. If you're in a bookstore at that time, it would be 3,830. The difference is that year, if we put that year equals the year 70 of the Common Era, which is the accepted year. So according how Tosfos learns, the years shtim. In other words, it works out well. According to Rashi and the Rambam, you have this difficulty of how the Romans have their history. It is not in concert with this interpretation. That's 1 year off. Yeah, with the wind chill factor. No, but it's but there is a discrepancy. It's very just interesting. I was just reading this again. There are various proofs that Christopher Columbus was Jewish. We had a whole lecture on this. But one of the interesting, when I read it, when I saw it, he wrote in his own diary about what the date was. And he described the date being so many years from the destruction of the temple. And he had the destruction of the temple as the year 68. So, as a professor, Cecil Roth, who was a professor of Jewish history, and he says, only a Jew would say it's the year 68. A non-Jew, where do you get the number 68? It's the year 70. It's only because you know that it happened the year 3,828. You make the mistake, of thinking that it's the not adding that extra year, as our calendar is. But he's a person who is familiar with the Jewish reckoning. Otherwise, says how would a non-Jew know this? So he was a young man, and he spoke to professor, this is Madriagas. What is there was a Spanish professor who wrote a whole work, a dissertation, that proving that Columbus was a Jew, and he told him this. He had a whole thing. He wasn't aware of this, and he told him this. Roth told us Madriagas. What is that the name? We once discussed this. He told this Spanish professor, and he says that clinches it. Like that's for sure. Like only a Jew would say 68. Which is interesting. But the truth is, it's a mistake because you have to add that truncated year to make it year. It would be really 69. And according to Tosfos, it would be 70. You have to say Columbus at Gehaltna Zovi Rashi. Held like Rashi and the Rambam. Okay. So we're getting now, so that's how the basis, once we get this number, that's how all of the rest of our calendar goes. You know, from the, you know, from the, from these are the fixed numbers. And we quote here, it says in your on the bottom of page, on the first page of your notes, from Rashi and Avodah Zorah, who basically says all of these numbers. You know, how we got to this number. That's how the basis of our calendar works. Now, there's an assumption from the Talmud that the first 5 days of creation were also, as it seems, at least with the citations we're going to quote now, we're going to quote other citations as well, but this that I'm going to quote now seem to assume that the day was, as the Ramban says in his commentary on the Chumash and the Torah, it was a 24-hour day. So the first 5 days of creation were just 5 days of creation. They weren't five epochs of millions of years, billions of years. They were just plain five regular days of creation. A 24-hour day. That's what it would seem, at least from this. We're going to quote other opinions, but it would seem from this opinion that is so. The first is we're going to quote here on the bottom of page 2. This is taken from the Gemara in Chagiga and Yud Beis Amud Aleph in 12a. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, 10 things were created the first day. They are as follows: heaven and earth. You know, we in a previous lecture, we brought various opinions about how the first day is reckoned. We quoted from Yehuda Halevi, the author of the Kuzari, who says that the first day really began after light was created. And after the initial light was created, then it dimmed, like the equivalent of being the setting of the sun. And at that point, after the dimming, we started counting the first day. And the Malbim, in his commentary, says that that is the most logical explanation, based on the idea, it's called Vayhi Erev, Vayvoker, it was evening and morning. Evening is something which it's not totally dark yet. It's darkening. So the Malbim understands, as he supports the view of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, that really the first day began after the creation of the light. So it comes out then the creation of light was not even on the first day. It was in the period before that. So this is how Rabbi Yehuda Halevi goes, and this is how the Malbim goes. We did explain, though, the opinion of the Abarbanel is not that case. Even though that this is opinion which the Malbim rejects, but that is, and it would seem from the Rambam, we brought from others, Ramban, that they all maintain that the creation of light happened on the first day, as well as the creation of everything was on that first day. That view is supported by this Gemara that we're reading right now, which would be in contradistinction to the Malbim of Yehuda Halevi. Every single thing was created on the first day. Heaven and earth, everything. What about the other day? No, so he was saying 10 things were created, that which matter. After that, it's just a matter of refining that which existed. But the main things were created, but on the first day. And it's not before the first day, as we quoted other opinions. But actually, is you know, that we're dealing with is that the we're dealing with the everything's on the first day. We quoted also an opinion of the Rashbam, which isn't, for other reasons, is not in concert with the Talmud, that he maintained that before the Torah was given, the day is really precedes the night. As by us, by the halacha, the night precedes the day. When does Shabbos begin? At sunset. He maintains before the Torah was given, the day began at sunrise. And if so, then the first day was created at the creation of light. Again, this is not what this. He says that all of this was created first. Evidently, this goes with the idea that the first evening was this time of toyu vavoyu, of blackness. All of this is called evening. And the creation of light is called morning, and it's day and night. One day includes all of that which is explained in the first verses of the Torah. And this is what Rav says. 10 things created the first day. They are as follows: heaven and earth, tohu, the chaos, bohu, desolation. There are various explanations of those words. Light and darkness, wind and water, like the measure of day and the measure of night. There's not only was, but the measure of this, it has a unique measure. There's the mida. There's everything, the 24 hours. How long light lasts, how long darkness lasts. This was all created the first day. And it would seem that, at least Rav's opinion, in Rav's opinion, is that, you know, it's a regular day. It's a regular night and it's a regular day. And all of this was created the first day. We will bring other opinions, but it's important to see this is how the Talmud views this.
Okay.
Time. It would seem. It means time. The second, on page 3, there's an interesting blessing that is said every 28 years. It's called Birchas HaChama, the blessing over the sun. It's going to be... It's going to be soon. What is this blessing of the sun? It goes every 28 years. It wasn't 28 years ago, but in every 28, yeah, it's going to be in another 3 years or so. It's going to be this event. It is based on the following. It's really a blessing of thanks, of wonderment, of the original creation. For practical purposes, even though they realize that this is a rough estimate, it's not totally accurate, but for practical purposes, the halacha recognizes that a day is 365 days and a quarter. Even though it's less than a quarter, slightly less than a quarter, but for practically we go with that number. Just because the halacha as a whole is not given over to mathematicians or astronomers, it's given to the masses of people. You have to give them a clear number. And the number is 365 and a quarter. That means if, let's say, the equinox, the spring equinox, occurs on the first year at 6 o'clock, you know, in the evening. That's when the equinox is. Well, we're going now a full year from then. It's 365 and a quarter. So if it occurred, let's say, for instance, if it occurred on Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, right, in the evening, right, 6 o'clock Tuesday night, 1 year. Next year it's going to be the equinox. You're going to move 365 days, you know, and a quarter. Well, you can divide 7 into 364. Right? So you're going to have 1 1/4 days different. So if the first day is going to be, in other words, if I'm going to start off at Tuesday night at 6, well, how long will it take? Well, it'll get back to that same point. Well, 364 days will get me back to Tuesday night, but it's 1 1/4. So it's going to be Wednesday night, and it's going to be 6 hours later, be midnight, the beginning of Thursday, end of Wednesday, beginning of Thursday. The year after that, again, I'm going to go 364 days will get me back to that point, but then it's a day and a quarter. So I'm going to get a whole day, which is going to be now at midnight. You know, this is Friday, and then it's going to go 6 hours there. So it's going to be six. Now I'm going to have it at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, so I'm going to keep on moving. When is it going to get finally back to Tuesday at 6 o'clock? It's going to take me 28 years. So 28 years is a full cycle to get me back. At the time of the understanding is the lights, the luminaries were put into their place on Yom Revi, on the fourth day. The understanding is at the very beginning of the fourth day. It would be the sunset. In other words, it would be six. There's the equinox. So it would be Tuesday night. You know, going into Wednesday. Right? So it's going into bed. So it would be 6 o'clock. So it takes 28 years to get back to that first place. So every 28 years, there's a blessing of an appreciation. When that occurs, we are a situation which mimics the creation. And it's not clear, we're not totally clear when the Talmud deals with this blessing. There's a certain assumption, well, if it was in Talmudic times, it must have been occurred before, and we know the blessings as a whole were instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGdol, the men of the Great Assembly, at the beginning of the Second Temple period. So according to tradition, that would be Circus as the year 350 before the Common Era. So it's an old blessing. But that whole blessing assumes that the first, it would only assume that we're dealing with regular days. Pretend if the first year, the first days were billions, millions of years. It doesn't work. It could only work that we're dealing with a regular day. So there's a certain, it would seem to be there's a certain assumption for the having instituted this blessing that the first days were regular days. Okay. And if you want to look at it, you have on page 3, we quote from the Gemara in Brachas, Nun Tesom and Beis, 59b, and Rashi's explanation. The next citation is on page 4. We're not going to go into into all of the gory details here, because it's beyond beyond this class. But I'll just touch upon this, so it's just important to realize. Again, I just want to reiterate from these sources, it would seem that the first days of creation were actually days. And I'd like, again, if you could go at the very end of your lecture notes on the bottom of page 13, and this is under the heading, The Basics of the Jewish Calendar. We went through before the basics of the basic Jewish chronology. The calendar, in other words, I know you're in shul, you know, I don't know if they say it in Yiddish or they say it in English, and this is the molad v'zayin, you know, the molad, we'll see what that means. The molad is going to be so and such hours and so many chalokim, you know, after this. What is all of this? What does this mean? And if you don't understand Yiddish, for sure there's a problem. We start off as follows. Okay. The average, and again, the number that our calendar is based upon is under the assumption that a lunar month, as I want to know how long does it take to go back one full cycle from new moon to new moon. How long does that take? It takes 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 chalokim, it's called. This is on number 4 here on this bottom thing. Lunar month is 29 days, 12 hours, chalokim. A chalik, if you look on number 3, right above this, there are 1,080 chalokim, parts, in an hour. Each chalik there is 3 1/3 seconds. So you have... So that's from one point to another. That is from one molad to another. In other words, if you happen not to know what this month's molad is, you know, but you have it written down what last month's is, make a quick calculation, and they'll all be impressed in shul, like you know the molad. The notice is it's 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 chalokim. You add this up, you will get the next molad. So therefore, it comes out the difference between 1 month and the next, is 1 day, 12 hours, 793 chalokim. The length of a standard 12-month lunar year, because approximately every 3 years we add an extra month. But the standard one, the majority of the time, is 354 days, 8 hours, and 876 chalokim. So if I happen to know this secret, I could figure out, I can go back and figure out every single molad. I'll know. Molad is the new moon. When did the first new moon start? You have to start a starting point. And this is the topic of this Tosfos here. I don't want to go through all of this. It's just fascinating. And it says, if you see, it's right in the middle of this paragraph, after the ellipses, is because, you see on page 4, you see the bold 7 days, 9 hours, and 642 chalokim? Yeah. After that, read, is because one who counts the years from creation does not consider Rosh Hashanah, that the new years to have started, until the sixth day of creation. This is what we've said before. Rosh Hashanah was on the sixth day, when Adam HaRishon, the first man, was created. And his assumption is as follows. The numbers were not created by the Tosfos. He's just trying to rationalize the numbers. On the ninth hour he was commanded, as the state in Perik says, Echadin Imominus in Sanhedrin in Lamed Ches on Beis in 38b. In all probability, it was then that he sanctified the month. He became a bar mitzvah at that point. The calendar began at that point. When he sanctified the month, the molad would have to be, as a minimum, occurred 6 hours prior to that. For the moon is not actually visible for the first 6 hours after it has astronomically entered the phase of the new moon. Right before the new moon, it's really like, it's impossible to see the moon. It's like eclipse. It's right between us and the sun. We just can't. The moon is here, in front of us. Behind that is the sun. There's nothing reflecting off of this. The whole idea of the moon is we see reflected light. Well, nothing's reflecting because once it starts moving away, there's a sliver which is now being bounced off. The further away, more gets bounced off. When it starts, the initial sliver, so to speak, is so slight that the human eye cannot catch this, at least under the conditions that we have. It could only be visible, theoretically, 6 hours later. After that, that is the time that, for minimally, the Bezdin, the Sanhedrin, would have declared it to be a new moon if it occurred during that period of time. So the assumption is, if Adam HaRishon was the one who declared it, and the conditions were such, this is the beginning of the cycle, it would have begun when it's 6 hours after it had begun to be seen, to be on this astronomical new moon. Now it's a visible new moon, at least in theory, and he would have declared it. This is the new moon. This is the beginning of the year. Well, then you have to work back 6 hours. 6 hours, then that will take us. This all happened in the ninth hour. It was after 8 hours had finished. So therefore, it would have happened after 2 hours in the day had been finished, would be the astronomical new moon, 6 hours before that. So that would be, at the end, it says the mnemonic is 614, which means that on the sixth day, at the end of 14 hours, the molad occurred. Since Rosh Hashanah didn't occur until the sixth day when Adam HaRishon sanctified the new moon, it follows that the creation of the world occurred on the 25th of Elul, as we said. We make the calculation from that time because even a day within a year is considered to be part of a year. This is all the Tosfos. He goes on to say then theoretically, not that it existed, but theoretically, had the year been not a five-day year that first year, but a regular year, if we would just extrapolate from the numbers, not that it actually was, we would say, well, what would have been theoretically the new moon of, had it been, pretend it would have been a real 364-day year, 365-day year, when would that first new moon have occurred? And it would have occurred on Beis, what it calls Yom Beis, you know, on Monday. This is Hay, this is after 5 hours, and Reish Dalet and 204 Chalokim. So it would be, that's how, this would be the theoretical new moon of this theoretical year. We take the five actual days and we just put it back in time, pretend it was a real year. What? And it would be back in, again, it would be a full year. So this would, again, yeah, for Tishrei. It would be the Molad for Tishrei. The Molad for Tishrei would be a year before. I mean, it wasn't a real year, but theoretically, and it would happen on Monday, 5 hours, and Reish Dalet Chalokim. Pretend there would be a Gabbai and a Shul then, and they would announce the Molad V'Zayin. You know, it says Montek by, you know, I mean, he would say, he says, Beis, as it would say, you know, Zuntek by Nacht, you know, Finit, you know, as it would say, Yoim, you know, Yoim Beis, this is 5 hours, and 204 Chalokim. That's the number that our entire calendar goes with. If you want to know what's today, you just work back from that number. And that, this assumption, how the calendar works, is assuming regular year. If those first 5 days of creation were billions of years and were lost. If the first day of Adam HaRishon, of man, when he was created, the sixth day of creation, would have been more than just a plain day of 24 hours, all these numbers don't make any sense. So at least it would seem that this common understanding, at least those who were involved with the calendar, was that we're dealing with regular days.
I'm trying to fathom out the logic because you're talking about something that wasn't in existence.
Yeah, but we're dealing with, what we start off, the number starts off with Adam HaRishon on that hour of the day, and we work backwards. Right.
And it wasn't in existence.
Yeah, but it's a theory, but we're working on the fact that those hours were just plain hours. I mean, forgetting about, pretend even if we didn't deal with the primal year, the hours between Adam HaRishon's coming to having mitzvahs and when the first thing was just 6 hours.
I just don't see the logic, because time has not yet created.
What do you mean? Time was created from creation. On the day that Adam HaRishon was there, time already was there. It's the sixth day of creation. Forgetting the backwards. Right? There's a sun and the stars on that sixth day, right? He, according to how Tosfos learns, he was Mekadosh to Lavona. In other words, that became that day on the... It's 6 hours after the Molad. So 6 hours after the Molad was a regular day. We're just dealing with a regular, plain day. We're not dealing with millions or billions of years on that day. It's a regular day. That's how they understood it, at least. A regular day. And then when they work backwards, they're working with those 5 days of creation, also just regular days. We just push them back. This is another to pretend that, but if we're dealing with billions of years, you don't push back billions of years and then I'm going to go and say, theoretically, and before that, pretend there would have been a regular year. Their understanding was, we're dealing with 5 regular days. There may be others who understand it differently, but we understand how at least those who are involved in the creation of the calendar and explaining the calendar understood that we're dealing with just regular days. That's the point I want to make.
Yeah? The more that we announce here in Yeshua is Jerusalem time. Am I right?
It's Jerusalem time, but it's astronomical time. Right.
Yeah.
Right, that's right. That's right. Okay. So I just wanted just to summarize at this point. This is how our calendar works and how the understanding of the first 6 days, 5 days of creation, The understanding, it seems, from the Talmud is at least we're dealing with regular days. That's all. I just brought really three sources for this. You know, after we went just understanding how our calendar works, you know, how we have that this is less than 6,000 years just when we count the, when you buy a calendar in a bookstore, just to understand that the first, the understanding is, at least from the Gemara as I quoted, is that the first days of creation are just regular days, 24-hour days. And we brought it from the fact is the Gemara Chagig Yud Beis Rav Rav Yudom Rav Midas Yom V'Laila. We quoted it from the idea of the bracha that we make on the sun, which assumes that we're dealing with regular days, and just how the makeup of our calendar, the assumption of those who made the calendar is that we're dealing with regular days. Originally, all through the 18th century, not only biblical and Talmudic scholars, but also scientists, with rare exception, understood the earth to be only some 6,000 years old, and interpreted the sedimentary strata and the fossils buried within them as evidence of the marble of the flood. That's how they originally understood this. The person who questioned this interpretation as responsible for changing that view was one of Europe's most respected naturalists, Baron George Cuvier, professor of comparative anatomy in the Museum of Natural History in Paris, and the founder of the science of vertebrate paleontology. Cuvier, who it seems was a deeply religious person, was convinced that the minim, the types or kinds, that God originally created were fixed and could not at all be changed. We spoke about the theory in previous lecture, the fixity of the species. This was not only due to his faith in the veracity of the biblical account of creation, but also to his expertise in comparative anatomy. As he wrote on page 20 of his work, The Revolutions of the Surface of the Globe, he writes, "Every organized being forms a whole, a unique and perfect system, the parts of which mutually correspond and concur in the same definite action by reciprocal reaction. None of these parts can change without the whole changing." End quote. In other words, one part couldn't have evolved separately, because it means a strain on the whole system. The system is made with a tremendous balance. So he had a problem. How could anything change unless they all changed altogether, which would be like a miraculous event? In other words, since all the organs, any organs are so interconnected, any natural evolutionary change would entail a change not just with one organ, but the entire organism. Otherwise, it could not fully function. That was his argument. Such changes, in Cuvier's opinion, would essentially entail a special act of creation, therefore could never be the product of a natural evolutionary process. As a result, Cuvier was a severe critic of the early evolutionists, such as Lamarck. Although Cuvier died in the year 1832, 27 years before Darwin published his Origin of Species, Cuvier's influence endured throughout much of the century and is the reason that Darwin initially encountered much resistance to his theory. In Cuvier's mind, not only are the major groups fixed, but even the variations within the groups were fixed. Accordingly, when the paleontologists uncovered species of animals that no longer exist today, although many were evidently similar to current species, Cuvier assumed that they could have not have lived at the time of Noah. After all, according to Cuvier, since all the minim, the kinds, traveled to the tape of the ark and were saved, these extinct animals must have predated Noah and his flood. That's because otherwise they would have gone in. Why didn't they go into the tape? Why didn't they go into the ark? Evidently, they weren't around. But if they weren't around, but we know they one time existed on the earth, must have been they were extinct before the time of Noah. Now, in between the view of Darwin and the other evolutionists, that all of life had evolved from an original cell, and it is possible to bridge the gap, even between the various phyla, such as reptile and mammals, etc., between that view and the view of Cuvier and the others of his time, that all of creation was fixed and immutable, There exists a third view, which we touched upon in the previous lecture. This middle position is based upon the Medrash Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer and the Pirush, the commentary of David Luria, the Riddal, as well as the commentary of the Netziv and Matoli Tzvi Yehuda Berlin on the Torah, the Hamak Dover. These sources maintain that within the mean, the type, there's much room for variation. In the words of David Luria, the Riddal, quote, it follows then that although the animals had undergone change from the time of creation up until the flood, nevertheless the ruler of the world who knows his creations commanded Noah to take in those major species whom he knew would spread out throughout the globe and branch out into the many species and varieties that we see today. According to this interpretation, all of the fossils are actually remnants of those animals who perished in the flood. The difference between present animals and their extinct cousins is due to the evolutionary change that occurred within each major type or mean. We'll deal with the extinction of the dinosaurs in a future lecture. According to Cuvier, since the meanim, the kinds which he defined in a much more narrow sense, were fixed, those extinct animals could not have lived just prior to the flood at the time of Noah. Because if they did, we said this before, the extinct animals should have been saved together with the other animals, since all the various types of animals were saved. Cuvier was therefore convinced that the fossil record recorded the catastrophes from previous ancient times before the Mabel. Noah's flood. And everywhere he dug, he found evidence of massive catastrophes. For instance, in the gypsum deposits in the suburbs of Paris, Cuvier discovered marine limestone containing over 800 species of shells, all of them marine, meaning salt water. Under this limestone, there's another freshwater deposit formed of clay, not gypsum, but clay. Among the shells in this deposit, all of freshwater origin were bones, but not of mammals, but of reptiles, of crocodiles, and tortoises. In the words of Cuvier, quote, it's called Essay on the Theory of the Earth, on page 15 from Cuvier. Life in those times was often disturbed by these frightful events. Numberless living things were victims of such catastrophes. Some inhabitants of the dry land were engulfed in deluges. Others living in the heart of the seas were left stranded when the ocean floor was suddenly raised up again, and the whole race were destroyed forever, leaving only a few relics which a naturalist can scarcely recognize, end quote. But Cuvier also believed that the superficial deposits of the earth had been laid down by the Mabel, Noah's flood. In his words, quote, if there be a fact well ascertained in geology, it is this: the surface of our globe has suffered a great and sudden revolution, the period of which cannot be dated further back than 5,000 or 6,000 years, end quote. Cuvier's view of many catastrophes or floods prior to Noah's was accepted by the great geologists of that period, such as Adam Sedgwick, Roderick Murchison, and William Buckland. According to this view, the earth is quite old, bearing the scars of many catastrophes not recorded in Genesis. But how do they reconcile this view of an ancient earth with the Genesis account? It seems that Cuvier himself proposed that the 6 days of creation were not 24-hour days, but rather epochs, which these massive disruptions occurred. Amongst modern Orthodox Jews, this view has many adherents. In section 2 on page 5 of your notes, I quote sources which maintain that the word day may have different meaning than the common 24-hour day. As we had quoted previously, sources which support the idea that the day is a 24-hour day. The first quote I have here, this is from the Sefer Maisei Hashem, from the Goyen Reb Eliezer Ashkenazi, who was the chief rabbi of Krakow, who died in 1587. He was after the Ramah in Krakow. He says, perhaps, each of those days of creation lasted a year, half of it in the evening and half of it in the morning. Again, it's not a, we're not dealing with millions of years, but according to him, at least the word day does not mean 24 hours. However, it's important to realize that at least he has a precedent for such an interpretation that the word day could mean a year. And that we find, at least it says, this is about a person who sells a house in the Ir, it's a base Moshe of Ir Choyma, in a walled city. And after it is sold, there's a year for redemption. As if a man sells a dwelling house, a walled city, and they may redeem it within a whole year after it's sold, within a full year may he redeem it. And the language is yomim tehein gulosoi. Even though it's not yomim, but yomim, but it has a sense of a full cycle. We do find another source, which those who maintain that it was just like Cuvier, it was longer than a regular 24-hour day. There's a Sefer Breishis Rabosi. Really, it's really a medrash from the late Gaonic period, from Rav Moshe HaDarshan, Rav Moshe HaDarshan is quoted often by Rashi, but this is a medrash which he put together himself. And in this medrash, it says, was evening, was morning, one day. This refers to the 1,000 years which are considered one day in the eyes of God, as it is stated, for 1,000 years in your sight are but like yesterday. There are those who interpreted, therefore he meant to say actually it was a longer day. It is, again, this is not necessarily the case. We had quoted before, says there's a Ramban who maintains that the first days were 24-hour days, but they hint at the cycle, just like there were 6,000, there's 6 days of creation and a seventh day, there's going to be 6,000 years of history and a 7,000 of rest, which we quote, if you know, in the very first page of the handouts, which is one of the citations, is in Avodah Zarah 9a, the Talmud of Eliyahu taught the world to exist 6,000 years, the first 2,000 years are to be void, as is Tohu, 2,000 years will be the period of the Torah, the following 2,000 years are the period of the Mashiach, that he may come during that time, or this is the time destined. And he describes that there's a 7,000th time of rest. So all of this medrash really could just be alluding to this correspondence rather than actually interpreting this. But those who seek to find some sort of precedent quote this. There's also another quotation here in paragraph C on page 6. It was evening, was morning, the sixth day. Rabbi Simon Bar Marta, this thing from the Medrash Bereishis Rabba, this is a standard medrash. This is chapter 9, this is number 14, said, up until now we counted according to the counting of the world, for now we count according to a different counting. And there are those who interpret this to mean that the counting, the days of the world were different days. And now it works differently. But the commentaries on this just explain when they dealt with day one, day two, day three, they're dealing from the beginning of creation. From that point on, in Scripture, we never deal with creation. We deal with this kingdom, this month, days of the month. We never deal like the days of first, second, third are unique. And according to that interpretation, really has nothing, it tells us nothing about how long the days were. They're just saying that the number system of 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of days is unique and not followed later on in the Torah. But there are those who look at this and want to find a source to say that the days were different. But ultimately, those who embrace this view, like Cuvier, do so in order to explain the fossil evidence, which is commonly assumed to indicate the world is many millions, if not billions, of years. According to this view, fossils were formed during the 6 days of creation. And really, according to this view, basically we're saying this, like this Cuvier, the Torah is only speaking about, from that point on that we know after Adam, those five, 6 days are filled with mystery. And all of these fossils came about during this time. Regular 24-hour days are too short a period to have all of this to have occurred. So accordingly then, according to this interpretation, to Cuvier and others, these days are longer days. One of the problems with this view is that we never find the word day or yom, which would refer to clearly divided periods of morning and evening. You know, erev and vok, which means anything but a normative 24-hour cycle. It's hard to say it was morning and evening of 1,000 years. You know, we just don't find it. Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal, in an article published some years ago, suggested that the very first days were different, as they were defined not by the rising and the setting of the sun, but by the primal light source that existed even before the creation of the sun and the moon, which went through a full cycle of becoming bright and dim. Accordingly, it may have taken perhaps millions or billions of solar years before the primeval light went through a complete cycle of shining and dimming. And six such cycles of the primal light, being bright and dimming, according to Schwab, may have lasted from 4.5 billion years of solar years, which is the common, that 4.5 billion years is the commonly accepted dating of the Earth. Again, this is not the traditional way of looking at this, but at least it explains we having a period of dimming. This, it isn't just arbitrary morning and evening. We're dealing with this primal light. The primal light dimmed, the primal light shone, it went through five such cycles, and then there was the sixth day. There are other approaches, each which is with its respective brilliance. Gerald Schroeder has an approach that the periods were actually 24-hour periods, but time is relative. In an expanding universe, at the very edge of the expanding universe, what would be 24 hours would be in the middle where the Earth is. It would have lasted some many millions or billions of years. There are other brilliant to explain the first days were measured by other means than you would normally assume. Again, of course, what prompted this new approach is a conviction, this is in the light of modern scientific discoveries, that it's impossible to understand the events described by the Torah any other way but changing the meaning of the word day. Either the word day meant billions of years, epochs, maybe it meant, like Rosh Shimon Schwab, just referring to the shining and the dimming of this primal light, which after eventually became hidden. Or it means perhaps we're dealing with a relative time at the edge of an expanding universe, or perhaps there are other explanations. But besides for these novel explanations of Yom, different than ours, we work 6 days and rest on the seventh. There's another possibility which is presented, perhaps in conjunction with the other views, is here on page 6 on paragraph D. In the seventh hour, Eve became Adam's mate, and as Adam's mate, Chava became the mate of Adam. In the eighth hour, they ascended to bed as two and descended as four. In other words, he immediately had the children. In other words, they had Cain and its twin. It all happened within a very short period of time. Evidently, during that period of time, the life cycle was very speeded up. And if so, they want to use this with other things to say that perhaps all we can date, all dating and everything, is assuming that we're dealing with not only is the time the same, but the events and activities are also the same. You see from this Gemara that there is a speeding up of the activities, and if there's a speeding up of the activities, perhaps then we go through many, many cycles of life and death and perhaps catastrophes in a 6-day period, but really the activities, you know, it's like, you know, the early movies that before the talkies, you know, came out, you know, when it was just the silent films, and you have these chases, you know, you ever see these, you know, the hurried up, you know, so in a sense, like, things were going a little fast. But even if we would accept all of these explanations being correct, there are still many difficulties with this approach that what the fossil record is a record of what occurred, like Cuvier maintained, during the 5-6 days of creation. And I'll explain them why that this approach has its difficulties. First of all, fish and other aquatic life appear what is known as the Cambrian and the Ordovician periods. Those are the first two periods of life. We touched upon them in a previous lecture. According to the current dating system, that's some 500 million years ago. Land plants first appeared in the Silurian, which is 438 million years. These are the primitive plants. The earliest flowering plants appear in the Lower Cretaceous, which is 144 million years ago. The first grasses appear in the Eocene, which is 58 million years ago. It would seem to be apparent that the fish preceded grasses and fruit-bearing trees. Yet, grasses and fruit-bearing trees are described in the Torah as having been created on the third day, whereas fish, were created on the fifth. Even if the days lasted millions or billions of years, it still doesn't account for this discrepancy. Another problem of reconciliation of the biblical account and the fossil record are the birds. Reptiles first appear in the Carboniferous period, 320 million years ago, according to the standard dating. Birds appear in the Jurassic period, some 200 million years ago. In other words, according to the commonly accepted dating system, reptiles preceded birds by over 100 million years. Not an inconsiderable amount of time. I mean, it's even longer than this lecture. But birds were created on the fifth day, whereas crawling creatures, including reptiles, were created on the sixth day. Another difficulty which I personally have with this approach is it would seem clear from the biblical narrative that the days of creation are not days of destruction. That's not the tenor. Destruction is described in very stark terms in the sixth chapter of Bereishis of Genesis during the period of the Mabul of the Noah's flood. The first chapter of the creation narrative clearly describes construction, not destruction. Satisfaction on God's part, V'yara Elohim ki tov, and he saw it was good, and not rejection. To assume that all the terrible suffering, death and destruction that we find in the fossil record occurred in the initial days of creation, l'fi ani hazdaiti, in my humble opinion, runs counter to the tenor of the whole narrative. So what we presented up until now, just let me just recap before we go further. What we presented up until now is that it would seem from the sources I quoted early on in the lecture, from the Gemara Chagiga, from the bracha we make over the sun, from the way our whole calendar is calculated, there's an assumption the first 5 days of creation are 24-hour days. We explain, though, the difficulty, the crisis, really, that occurred, and discovery of these fossils, which, at least how Cuvier understood this originally, had to have occurred before any flood. Because otherwise, why weren't these creatures put into the ark? So the destruction happened before. So when did this occur? So Cuvier's explanation that all this destruction occurred during the 6 days of creation, besides the difficulty of the 24 hours, even if we stretch the time, still has difficulties. Which brings us to the next explanation. Cuvier's explanation was not the only one offered to resolve this problem. In the year 1814... a Scottish theologian by the name of Dr. Thomas Chalmers propounded what he felt was a new theory that would account for the destruction recorded in geological record, and yet retained the literal sense of the first chapter of Genesis. He proposed that the first verse, Bereshis, in the beginning God created heaven and earth, is describing the initial creation which occurred eons ago. The second verse, when the earth was void and empty, is describing the state of the earth as it was some 6,000 years ago. Now, this is the creation gap theory. There's a gap between verse 1 and verse 2. In the words of Dr. Chalmers, quote, Moses may be supposed to give us not a history of the first formation of things, but the formation of the present system. As we've already proved, the necessity of direct exercise of creative power to keep up the generations of living creatures. So Moses may, for anything we know, be giving us the full history of the last great interposition, and be describing the successive steps by which the mischief of the last catastrophe were repaired, end quote. What is amazing is this interpretation, which was arrived at by a Calvinist theologian, in order to resolve the conflict between science and Torah, is actually well supported by Jewish tradition. We've touched upon this in previous lectures. Because of the time, I'm going to not to dwell, we've discussed this at length. But here, it says, we'll just touch upon this briefly, and we'll go into the Tiferes Yisroel, his explanation at length. We've quoted here on page 6 in section 3. This is a quote from the Bereishis Rabba, Parsha Gimel. Parsha. This is the third Parsha. This is in the seventh section, Pisgah Zion. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simon said, Scripture does not state let there be evening, but rather it was evening. For here we see that time existed beforehand. And as this would seem to run counter to Rav's opinion, which we began the lecture, the Midas Yoim V'Laila, everything was created, you know, on the first day. It was actually, there was a world here before the first day. And as this seems to run counter to this. Because of this, Rabbi Yehuda said, this teaches us that he, means Hashem, created worlds and destroyed them until he created these. He said, I have pleasure with these and I don't have pleasure with the others. We quoted in previous lecture the Sefer HaPliya, which is a Kabbalistic work from the late 13th, the early 14th century, that this actually, this cycle that we have, which is stated in the Talmud, of 6,000 years and the seventh year of destruction, is really a recurring cycle, which really is part of the Jubilee cycle. And the question is, which cycle are we in? According to the Sefer HaPliya, we are in the second cycle. And we quote here on page 7 from Masechta Atzilus, this is from Oitzer Midrashim, about a previous world that was destroyed, and a real world. Trees destroyed them, trees and uprooted them. There seems to be a real world that was destroyed. And again, we quoted before, and this is on number 4 here on page 7, about the generations that preceded us, the 974 generations which preceded the creation of the earth. And Rabbi Nachum Kasher quotes this manuscript of Medrash Tehillim that actually were real people on this earth that died. We also quote here in the bottom from Nosanotra Shapiro, which is also similar to the Sefer Pliya, that this is the second cycle. We do quote, though, and this is, we've quoted this before, on page 8, this is from the Torah Shlema, that he quotes from the Sefer Livnas HaSaper, Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid, written in the year 1325, that explains that there's an argument in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in Salik Zayin, Amud Aleph, 97a, about how long, this is also touched upon as a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Lamed Aleph, how long will the period of destruction be? One opinion is that it will be destroyed for 1,000 years, this earth, before it regenerates. Another opinion has it will be destroyed for 2,000 years. And we've touched upon a previous lecture, the Sefer maintains that what they're disagreeing upon is this the last of the 7,000-year cycles? In other words, there's really been 7 7-year cycles. This is the last. And besides the destruction, the Shemitah, the laying fallow, the earth, for 1,000 years is an additional 1,000 years for the Jubilee year. So according to that, really, the earth has been here, not the 7,000 years that we're talking about, is this last cycle. There have been many cycles before us. According to Moshe Kodavira, he suggests perhaps this is the fifth cycle. Four have passed before us. But the Tiferes Yisroel, which is very often quoted, maintains, he quotes from Mekubalim, we don't have the source, that actually this is the fourth cycle. And I'll just, because of the time, you can read this all on your own. He maintains from the sources that that actually this is the second cycle of man. There's the 974 generations of man that preceded us, lived on this earth, and were destroyed. This is the fourth world. There's this, three other worlds that preceded us, two without man. And he maintained, according to this, that the fossil evidence is a record of the previous worlds. That which is described in Bereishis from the second verse on is a description of the last 6,000 years. But it has nothing to do with the fossils, which were really the record of these previous worlds. And in fact, he looks at the fossils as supporting this view, which we find propounded by these Mekubalim. This is the view that he takes. So you could look at it in detail. This is taken. It's printed at the end of the Mishnayos of where his Pirush is printed, the Tiferes Yisroel, on the Zikin Aleph, and it's called Drush Ora Chaim. And in detail, this is taken from this. But that basically is his view. According to that view, then, there really is no contradiction between the fossil record and the record of the 6 days, because it's not dealing with the fossil record at all. That really is a record of previous destructions. We know from Midrashic sources there were destructions, and this records them. But the catastrophic interpretation of the fossil record, we have enunciated by Cuvier and others. First, before Cuvier, they maintained that the fossil record is from the Mabel, from the flood. From Cuvier, it came from worlds before the flood. We just brought these two opinions about the 6 days of creation. Just understand, if they're not from the flood, and they're from before the flood, how could we resolve this problem and only have 6 days of creation? And we have two approaches. Either the fossil record is really from those first 6 days of creation. That was Cuvier's approach. But the days were longer than 24-hour days, and we brought sources, at least opinions that maintain this to be true. We quoted the difficulties with that approach. And we quoted this Thomas Chalmers view, which is supported, we said, that Tiferes Yisroel quoted from Midrashim, the idea that there are many worlds that were destroyed before these last 6,000 years. And according to Tiferes Yisroel, then, the fossils are the records of those destructions. But that view, the scientific view, was supplanted by a wholly different approach. That was what is called uniformitarianism. That the geological record was created not by catastrophe, sudden massive floods, outpouring of lava, as the earth suffered periodic convulsions, but by the slow processes that we see today. In the words of the father of uniformitarianism, the 18th century Scottish geologist James Hutton, quote, "The present is the key to the past," unquote. As we touched upon in a previous lecture, the man most responsible for the acceptance of this new paradigm was Charles Lyell, the 19th century author of the classic work on uniformitarianism, Principles of Geology. It was Lyell's work that most influenced Darwin to create his new theory on the origin of species. According to this theory, the world was not thousands of years old, but many millions, and is a record not of repeated catastrophes, but of slow natural processes. According to this approach, not only is there no record of previous worlds, there's also no record of the marvel of Noah's flood. Although current scientific opinion no longer embraces Lyell's strict uniformitarianism, it maintains it's quite conceivable that in the past, great catastrophes convulsed the earth. For example, the catastrophe which brought an end to the age of the dinosaurs. Lyell's dating system and much of his philosophy has remained intact. In addition, in this past century, evidence was amassed, based on testing the age of certain radioactive elements, that the world is much older than even Lyell ever assumed. The various approaches to deal with this evidence, as well as the wealth of evidence to support the literal reading of the text, the world was indeed created a mere 6,000 years ago, will be the subject of the following lectures. Now, are there any questions?
We seem to have missed out the obvious answer to the puzzle that there's a shell created with the puzzle.
Yeah, there's the point was brought, why can't we say, just simply, that God created a world with fossils? It's all part of the creation. Just as he created a world when the first trees were created, we assume that there must have been tree rings. So also that there's this whole history that was created. And when the first fossil evidence came to light, there were many amongst the Christian theologians who offer this approach. I personally, as well as many others, have difficulty with this approach because since typically every tree has tree trunks, tree rings, well, you create a 20-year-old tree. Well, he created, it looks like a big tree. Well, he created a prototype of what a tree is going to be. But there's no reason from the world to have created bones of animals that never existed before, and to create all kinds of really a garbage heap of stuff here, of things that never existed. For what purpose? Like, it doesn't follow. Just to confuse us. So that answer was given. I personally, as well as many others, have problems with it. If people are okay with this, it's fine with me too. But I personally have, to me it seems, if we find these things, they were here. We have to explain how they were here. What? But they were here. I mean, I just...
Answer that the same way as we don't know the answer to all of the creations by Shem, as with the appendix and other things. You're not sure of what the purpose of it might be?
No, but you see, an appendix is, there is a organism. It is working. I don't know its function. I will find out its function. They don't serve a function. They're just junk. You know, so it's just very, I personally have a problem to say these never happen. Just, Hashem made a lot of junk, you know. It's tough making a world, you know what I mean? There's a lot of, you know, if a person's happy with it, I'm happy too. But I personally have a problem. What? Well, that you should know about the only a very small part of what we call fossil fuels produce fuel. Most of the other thing is just in the middle of nowhere. And second of all, it's not even so clear that the fuel, may touch upon this, is really created by through the fossils as well. You know, much of oil has been dated through carbon dating, which seems relatively new. So if people are happy with that explanation, it's fine. I just personally have a problem with it. No questions, it must have been great. Okay, a good tova.